Centre at 6. The Vietnamese embassy says it's been contacted by some families to ask police if any of the 39 people found dead in a lorry in Essex are from the country. Relatives of 26-year-old Pham Thi Cha My fear she is among the victims. They got messages from her saying she couldn't breathe. Detectives have made two more arrests as part of their investigation. Philippa Southwell is a human trafficking lawyer.
The average cost of being smuggled from Asia is around £40,000. They don't have that sort of means. So the agreement is they will pay a small amount or they will give their property to the smuggling ring. But when they get to the UK, they have to work to pay off the remainder of that debt.
Ambassadors in Brussels have agreed the UK can have a Brexit extension but won't decide until next week how long it should be. Meanwhile, the Prime Minister's reiterated his challenge to the Labour leader to support a general election on December the 12th. Eight people are dead after a Russian conscript opened fire on colleagues at an army base in Siberia. The Defence Ministry has said he suffered a nervous breakdown. A danger to life warning has been issued as heavy rain is forecast across northern England and South Wales. We're told the northern half of the country should expect temperatures in the high single figures over the weekend. A bottle of whiskey has been sold at an auction for a record £1.5 million. The Macallan 6-year-old 1926 eclipsed the previous record by £300,000 for a bottle of scotch. Sotheby's, which conducted the bidding, hasn't revealed the buyer but described it as the Holy Grail. Whiskey expert Charles McLean says it's highly unlikely it will be drunk.
It's treated just like a commodity, to be honest, which is sad from the perspective of the consumer and the collector, because it's way beyond the reach of them to buy and enjoy the whisky. So that it would have been bought as an investment, is my guess.
Lewis Hamilton has apparently turned down a part alongside Tom Cruise in the Top Gun sequel. The F1 driver says filming clashed with his racing commitments. That's the latest. I'm Will Rowe.
This is your award-winning BCFM. BCFM on 93.2. 4 hours a day.
This is Bristol. It's Friday, 6 o'clock. Welcome to BCFM's Politics Show. I'm Tony Gosling. Helping me review this week's news is the Green Party's Bristol Mayor candidate in next May's election, Sandy Hoare-Ruthven, and Gloucester's prospective parliamentary candidate for the Brexit Party, Richard Ford. Irish Republican Labour activist Martin Summers is here too. After the US-owned Comcast News at 7, political crisis in Israel. Netanyahu gives up his attempt to form a government again for the second time this year. Last time they just had another election. This time, could it be the end for Bibi as his corruption charges loom? And Australian newspapers blank out covers because of blatant attacks by the state in Oz on all sorts of media. Also, Julian Assange, talking of Aussies, appears in court here in London. He's looking very ill. Is the greatest investigative journalist of the 20th century an internet pioneer being snuffed out? On the tail and the trail of Nazi Party's brute of a treasurer, Martin Bormann. This week, the Bristol Connection, the Jewish refugee and local journalist who tracked Bormann down in the 1970s. Paid heavily for his trouble. And the power of debate, the lies and trivia in the mass media, what dumbing down really means. The Jewish colleague of Zionism author Stephen Sizer, Mr. Getmer, gets a surprise as he traces his DNA roots. That's all in the second hour after the US-owned Comcast News at 7. On to our news review in a minute, but first Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, lows around 14 Celsius, gusty winds and light rain. clocks are going back this weekend. Don't forget that. That's tomorrow night. Highs this weekend around 16 Celsius. Heavy rain and windy tomorrow. Sunny spells, though, on Sunday. Next week, highs of 11 Celsius, getting cooler and cooler bit by bit. Sunny spells at the beginning of the week. Patchy rain at the end of the week. Next weekend, 2nd and 3rd of November, highs of 11 Celsius, mainly cloudy with showers. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. So joining me to review this week's news at Green Party's Bristol Mayor candidate in next May's election, Sandy Hoare-Ruthven. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, how are you?
And Gloucester's prospective parliamentary candidate for the Brexit Party, Richard Ford. Hi, Richard.
Good evening, Sandy.
I'd like just first from you, Sandy, to get your take on the latest Brexit. Let's try and get it over with as soon as possible. It's dragging on and on. But apparently an extension is going to be decided on Monday, if there is going to be an extension, but it's still not 100% certain. What do you think?
Well, I'm not an expert in European political machinations, but what I can see is that we're still stuck. And I think even if we have a general election, then we will end up in a similar place. Actually, I don't think the electorate is clearly moving one way or the other. So I'm not sure if an election will solve the problem. We may well end up with a hung parliament. And so we still need to go, to my mind, back to the people to ask for a final vote to see what they want.
Richard?
Well, I mean, the people, of course, had the vote 3.5 years ago. It was conclusive. It was 52%. It's a Remainer parliament.
Hang on, 52% is not conclusive, is it? It's very marginal.
It's a majority. It's a majority in a company. It's a majority in anything. So a majority is a majority. And according to the law, it's a majority. At the time, the Prime Minister said, vote that way and you'll be leaving. We've had, as you rightly say, Sandy, machinations from a Remainer parliament that's tried to frustrate the will of the people. The people still want to leave. They want the thing done. Extending it, I agree, there could be a hung parliament if there's an election. Are we going to have an referendum if there's another vote and it goes marginally the other way? Will it continue ad infinitum? People voted. It was clear what they were voted for. They weren't all stupid, thick, ill-educated, elderly, whatever has been said by the Remainer side. A lot of them were professional people, sensible people. People had the vote. They expressed the vote. Hasn't happened. And, of course, we have a crisis of democracy because it hasn't happened. And the problem, of course, or I suspect you may well agree with me, is that Parliament doesn't represent the people because, of course, the electoral system, this is the fundamental problem with the first-past-the-post system, where you can have a party can get 4 million votes and one MP and a party get 150,000 votes and 10 MPs. And, of course, that's always to the benefit of the Labour and Conservative parties, which is why it's remained that way.
Actually, it's the one thing maybe we can have some unanimity here because surely this is something that the Greens would support as well, and you, Martin, for Labour. So
Labour don't support
Hear from Martin now.
I certainly do, yes. I mean, when Jeremy Corbyn was first running to be leader of the party, I buttonholed him at a meeting down here in Bristol, and I said, why don't you go for PR? Because the New Zealand Labour Party, the left wing of the Labour Party, forced PR in the 1980s.
And he said it's going to be political suicide.
What he said was, I'm prepared to have a constitutional convention to look at all of this stuff, but really, fundamentally, we need a written constitution.
He was just fobbing you.
If we're going to have referendums in the written constitution,
Martin, there'll have to be rules about referendums. He was fobbing you off, really, wasn't he?
No, he wasn't fobbing me off. He said, I'm not convinced, and I'm not going to commit to PR. I wish he would, because in New Zealand, it was the left wing of the Labour Party that forced PR because they were sick of a right wing government that was going to do Thatcherite policies.
And can I just say that Labour has been approached on a number of occasions over the last 30 or 40 years to engage in PR. They say yes when they're not in power, and suddenly they say no when they are in power.
I agree with the Greens. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
But Sandy, on this whole thing of elections, you saying there that, it probably won't make any difference if we do have a general election. It may not do. We've already had two votes. We've had a referendum. We've had a general election that's put this parliament in there. And if we have
another general election,
that's going to be another vote about Brexit. Actually, surely a general election should be about the things that really matter.
Yeah, well, I agree. And that's why we would say put it back to the people's vote.
We've had one.
Hold on. But the general election should be about all sorts of things, from youth work to the NHS to the economy. But let me take your point, Richard, about I would never accuse anybody who's left who voted for Leave to be stupid or ignorant. And I think that's a characterisation which, unfortunately, the Brexit Party is pushing.
I've had it said to me in Gloucester. People come up and say that to us in the street.
Okay, I understand that, but I would not agree with that. What I would say is this is like buying a house. We looked at the house, we said yes as a country, 52% said yeah, we really like the house, we'd like to leave, and that's fine. Now we know the detail of it, and in exactly the same way as when you're buying a house, you look at whether the roof's leaky, whether there's damp or any of the other issues. Yeah. Now we know the detail, let's put it back to the people. Richard, you are so confident that leave is the right thing to do, put it back to the people.
Well, we've done it three times. You know, we did it back in the referendum in 2016.
We haven't done it three times.
2016 in the referendum, we did it. 2017 during election, both Labour and Conservative. I didn't interrupt you, did I?
Okay, all right.
So 2016 referendum, 2017, both Labour and Conservative, who got about 85% of the votes, fought on a manifesto of implementing the referendum result. 2019, earlier this year, the Brexit Party won throughout the country based on that prospectus. So please don't tell me that we haven't been three times inspecting the house.
Well, one person who I like to hear talking about this quite a lot, and he very rarely says anything about it, is the inscrutable former governor of the Bank of England, Mervyn King. He was speaking in Washington last weekend, and there was no reporting of this, as far as I could see, anywhere on ITN, ITV, Channel 4 or BBC, but Sky did cover it. So let's have a listen now to his take on this. Mervyn is not one of those sort of city political insiders. He went to grammar school in Worcester. His father was a railway porter, and somehow he managed to become governor of the Bank of England. And I have more time for him than I have for a lot of these public school types that seem to be sort of parachuted into these big roles. So let's have a listen to Mervyn King's take, speaking to Sky, I think it was last Sunday.
Obviously, we're here in Washington, but there's lots of focus back home about Brexit. A draft deal has been done. There's been some difficulty getting it through the Commons. But broadly speaking, I mean, are you encouraged that there is any kind of a deal at the moment? Is this good news for the economy?
Well, I suppose that it's good that we have a deal and that the EU and the British government and the Irish government have agreed on a deal. It's frustrating that Parliament can't seem to make up its mind on it and hasn't been given a chance, really, to vote. But in the coming week, let's hope that they do. I think most people probably feel that this has gone on for far too long and just have the view that, you know, just do it.
Do you see this as being better for the UK economy, worse for the UK economy? Is it possible to make that judgment?
Well, I think it's a mistake to try and map any particular deal into precise numbers about whether it's good or bad for the British economy. My view has always been that a decision to leave the European Union in the long run is not likely to have a major impact on the British economy either way. What it has done is provoke a tremendous political and constitutional crisis.
And in that, it should be said, in that, you're slightly going against the grain of many other economists, and you know, it's been seen as quite controversial.
But I think there's an awful lot of bogus quantification that's gone on in trying to justify positions held quite honestly for other reasons.
Including for the Bank of England?
No, I not say that at all. I think it's very interesting. If you look at what the bankers said, they've not forecast what the consequences would be. What they did was to say, what's the worst that could happen? And we must make sure the financial sector is ready for the worst that could happen. That's their job, and they've done that extremely well. I wish the rest of government had been as enthusiastic and energetic in getting ready to give the UK a choice between different options.
And now, what is your hope on Brexit?
Well, it would be really nice to have to be able to stop talking about it. I think everyone is completely fed up with what's gone on. You can't have a parliament that can do only one thing, which is to vote against every conceivable alternative. I've said before, we need a new parliament, and I think we need an election where it's clear which people believe in Remain and which people believe in leaving, and whichever parties or coalition of parties obtain a majority in that general election will be able to claim that they have both a public mandate and a majority in the House of Commons to pass the legislation needed to pursue that objective, irrespective of whether that's Remain or Leave. We just have to resolve this now. And I just find it extraordinary that Parliament cannot bring itself together, even today, to have a vote on the principle of the deal, but that they have to, you know, start passing lots more amendments. This is playing games in the mind of the most of the British people.
How do you explain that then?
Because most people in Parliament probably believe in Remain. They also happened to vote for a referendum. Parliament's brought this on itself. And frankly, the sooner we can get rid of this, the better.
Okay. I mean, Claire, you know, let's move on to what you've been talking about here in Washington, because, you know, that is an issue that certainly the focus on Brexit in the UK has meant that we're not looking perhaps as much as we might normally do at the global economy.
But I think it's worse than that. I think we're not even looking at the underlying economic challenges for the United Kingdom. We have one of the lowest saving rates in the British economy of any country in the G20, save perhaps for Argentina. We're not saving enough to finance our pensions. We're not saving enough to finance care for the elderly. We're not saving enough to finance investment in infrastructure. And we haven't yet worked out how we're going to be able to produce more money for the National Health Service. These are the big challenges. What do we do about the education of 50% of the population who don't go to college or university? These are the issues that will determine our prosperity in the future, not Brexit. And it's a great shame that this issue has dragged on for so long that we've been distracted from thinking about things which are important, even just for the United Kingdom.
Well, I think I agree with him that we've been distracted, but that's because the Tory party decided to have a referendum on Brexit. And unfortunately, once you've decided to do that, you've got to carry on talking about it. Even if we leave next week, and it's not clear we will, we're then going to have to start talking about the free trade agreement that we're not going to be able to get with the Europeans, because they're not going to allow us to undercut their standards.
Martin, he wants it over with, don't you?
Well, no, I don't want it over with. All I would say about what's happened about this, everybody wants it over. This is politics at work. This is politics at work, and you can't just push a deal which you've behind closed doors and then expect Parliament to just rubber stamp it. We're going to go through it line by line, because we're either going to have it be in the customs union, or there's going to have to be another referendum. And of course, what's going to happen in Northern Ireland is that everybody's going to vote against this deal. All the Republicans voted against it, but all the Loyalists are going to vote against it as well. And of course, they already had a majority against leaving the EU in Northern Ireland in the first place.
Richard, what do you make of it?
Well, I think Moen was spot on. I mean, so many things he said were true. People are sick to the back teeth of it. We need it to be sorted now. Now, the reason that we're in this situation isn't because there was a referendum. The reason is because we had a referendum and the result was reneged upon by this Remainer Parliament, composed of, you know, Labour, the Lib Dems, the one Green MP, and all the rest of it. So if you have a referendum and don't implement it, what do you expect? And we have people in this country, and I'm very, very sure about this, are more leave now than they were back in 2016. They are totally sick to the back teeth of this zombie Parliament. Now, I'm not saying for a moment that we should just go in on Boris's warmed-up Theresa May Brino deal in 3 days. I do agree with you on that point. We shouldn't be doing that. We should be having the clean break Brexit that people voted for. We should be leaving. If this, you know, if we had can I finish? If we had left when we should have left 3.5 years ago, this would all be history now. We'd be doing all the things that Mervyn King was just saying. Can I finish? Was planning for the economy, planning for the national health, planning for the future prosperity of our country. But we haven't. We've had by the dilettantiness, frankly, of the Green Party, the Lib Dem Party, the Labour Party, and much of the Conservative Party, we are in this mess. And there is only one single party, which is the Brexit Party, which is prepared to implement exactly what the people voted for. Can I finish? 3.5 years ago.
So, Sandy, go.
So, I what I would say, I think there's this caricaturisation of both sides, I think, is quite damaging. I think most people who want to remain, like myself, are doing it and because we feel that actually that's the best way forward for our country, whether it's workers' standards, environmental standards, you know, how to actually to boost trade and that kind of thing. So I think it's not just trying to thwart the will of the people. It is a genuine desire to do what is right. Hold on. So it is a... is. Yeah, and I do accept the mandate. And then there was never talk of a no deal Brexit during the referendum. And so Martin is right that what we are now doing is going through incredibly complicated discussions about how we might or might not extract ourselves from the European Union. And I think that we just need to, that is a process that we need to go through. The thing that everybody is clear on, and there is only a minority of people who want to leave without a deal, right? So let's be clear on that. Most people understand that we might need to leave, even if you voted Remain, but there is very few people who think that leaving without a deal is a good
Sandy,
idea.
Sandy, the deal is there. Boris Johnson has got a deal, apparently. We've also got a potential of an extension now coming along. But on this deal, there was an attempt to get this deal debated and discussed. That didn't happen. And yesterday, Leader of the House, Jacob Rees-Mogg, announced that, well, if you're not going to allow this to be discussed and debated, then all we're going to do is we're going to next week call for another, or make another call for a general election, because we're fed up, just as the people are. That's what he's implying. But let's hear what Jacob Rees-Mogg had to make in yesterday's announcement in the Commons.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Having made one earlier, I knew the House couldn't wait for another statement from me. I'd like to make a very short statement this evening regarding Monday's business. Before the House considers the second reading of the Environment Bill, members will have an opportunity to debate and approve a motion relating to an early parliamentary general election. The business for the rest of next week remains as I announced earlier.
Shadow Leader Valerie Vaz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and can I thank the Leader of the House for making this business statement. Mr. Speaker, tomorrow we will find out what extension has been granted. We opposed the Prime Minister's Withdrawal Agreement Bill, but it passed second reading. Several of my Labour colleagues have voted for that bill, not because they support the Prime Minister's deal, but because they wanted to scrutinise it, amend it and debate it. Is the normal process in this House. We on this side offered the Prime Minister our support for a proper timetable to enable the Withdrawal Agreement Bill to be properly dealt with. But the Prime Minister has rejected that in his letter to the Leader of the Opposition because he does not want that scrutiny. But Mr. Speaker, I want to make it clear that Her Majesty's Opposition Labour Party will back an election once no deal is ruled out. And wait for it, if the extension allows.
Yes.
Mr. Speaker, the Right Honourable Lady says the Prime Minister has not made sufficient time. In his letter to the Leader of the Opposition, my Right Honourable friend says, we will make available all possible time between now and the 6th of November. We, Mr. Speaker, are willing to start work tomorrow, if you're willing to recall Parliament. We are willing to work 24 hours a day between now and the 6th of November. But what are the words of that hymn? Even eternity is too short to extol thee. It seems to me that eternity is too short for the opposition because their opposition is fantasy opposition. They don't want Brexit, and however much time we give them, they will come up with some foolish objection.
Sir Patrick McLaughlin.
This will be the third time that the House will have voted on a general election. Can the Leader of the House tell us on any other occasion he can recall that the opposition have been offered an election on three occasions and rejected it?
Mr. Speaker, Earlier today, I was actually praising the Right Honourable Gentleman, the Leader of the Opposition, and today I'm able to quote him because his words are words of wisdom. He said on the 24th of September 2019, exactly 1 month ago, this crisis can only be settled with a general election. That election needs to take place as soon as this government's threat of a disastrous no deal is taken off the table. We have met the condition he set. The Prime Minister has got a deal. No deal is off the table. And yet, for some reason, the opposition still doesn't want a general election. But, Mr. Speaker, we know why this is. We know why they won't have an election. It's because they're afraid of the voters. Of the voters, so feeling disenfranchised are they with their socialist friends that the socialists are running away from an election.
Are the socialists running away from an election?
I think that we don't have to have an election at all if we don't want one. I'm afraid that's the reality of the situation.
Richard?
Of course they're running away from it. the whole raison d'etre of a leader of the opposition is to make the government fall and to bring in an election. Labour are scared silly and they're running away from an election.
No, we're not going to have a no-deal Brexit.
There's no question.
At the end of 2020, there's still a no-deal track door in there. We're not having an election until that's removed.
Can I finish? There is no question the Labour Party is in meltdown. It's losing voters, remain Labour voters to the Lib Dems. It's losing Leave and the Greens, to be fair. And it's losing Leave Labour voters to the Brexit Party. The last thing Labour want is an election for the very reason they're going to lose it.
In fact, and I'm going to agree with Richard there. I think Labour have weaseled through this process. They haven't been clear what it is that they want, and they're aiming just for electoral victory, which feels like what Jeremy Corbyn has sort of been aiming for from the start. But actually, I think people have seen through that and are looking for proper leadership.
Caroline Lucas doesn't want an election before
Martin, can we just put that question to you? What do Labour want? If they don't want this deal,
what we need to have is if we scrutinise this deal, if we get a flexible extension, there'll be time for everybody to talk about this deal and nail down what's in it. And of course, there's really important questions about the customs union, questions about the single market, that's what it takes. If you're going to make a decision which is a once in a generation decision since World War II, you don't just rush it through on the nod. And of course, the DUP will oppose this deal because it leaves Northern Ireland inside the single market.
I think you need to calm down a bit if you don't want me saying so much.
No, I know, but I am getting angry with people saying we all want this done now. We don't necessarily want it done now, we want it done properly.
I just ask you a question. If you don't want no Brexit and you don't want this deal, what do you want?
What we want is a deal that we're happy with, which we can then put to the people.
So you want your own deal?
Well, if we want it, there's two possibilities here. We either have an election followed by a referendum, or we have a referendum followed by an election. And that's the only two ways out of where we are.
Sandy?
Can I imagine a sort of take us back 3.5 years and imagine a slightly different type of politics? So, okay, the referendum's called, which I think was a bad idea in the first place, but imagine campaigns that try to deal with facts, not fiction, and then a Prime Minister who responds to that and says, okay, 52% said leave, 48% said stay. That feels like a soft Brexit to me. It's going to take 5 years to negotiate this. It's going to take time because we've been in the EU for 40 years. We're going to debate it alongside all of the other stuff that we have to do around the economy and health and education and young people. Imagine a different kind of politics that takes us through this, what is a difficult debate that doesn't involve whether Labour get power or not, whether the Tories get power or not, and it's not brought and dragged to the extremes by people like the Brexit Party. I think there is a different way of doing this. I think PR actually would be a way of us achieving a different kind of politics.
We've already talked about PR. Richard, what do you make?
Well, going back 3.5 years, the fact of the matter is, Cameron was so arrogant he never thought that he would lose, and he didn't make the provisions for Plan B or for what would happen. He basically was just patting people on the head.
Well, my understanding was that he was only made leader on the say-so by the pro-Brexit wing of his party. He said, well, yeah, we'll back you for leader, but you must have this referendum. So he started to rein back on that, and he wasn't prepared to take them on.
Well, if that's the case, you have the referendum, you do have a plan B, and you do decide what's going to happen if it goes the other way. He had no plan B, and he went away, and he's now resurfaced a few weeks ago flogging his book at the Cheltenham Literature Festival. Now, that's absolutely outrageous, totally arrogant Conservatives, and as for so-called Conservative Brexiteers, they're not doing anything. I mean, look at Rees-Mogg, you just heard him. You know, he is flogging Boris's warmed up Theresa May plan. So, and please don't, Sandy, please don't call us extreme, Brexit Party extreme. We want to implement the referendum, the verdict of the British people. Can I finish? 3.5 years ago. I find lots of Extinction Rebellion and what the Green Party do in Stroud, near to where I live, I find that extreme, but I haven't called you an extremist.
No, but there is very few people. And there is no majority for a no deal. And therefore, it is going to take a long time to negotiate. Okay.
Yeah. Now, look, we've got also something else going on in the background here, another big delay, which has not been talked about. I haven't seen anywhere, really, on the mainstream press, and that's the delay at the European Commission, because a whole bunch of new commissioners, these are the failed politicians they put forward to run the EU, have been kicked out by MEPs because of their financial irregularities. And so they've had to delay the implementation of the new commission by at least a month. I thought we'd have a listen now to some of the hearings that have been going on over in Brussels. The MEPs scrutinising these new people, that people like President Macron, etc., have nominated to be our new EU leaders.
One of the things I'm interested in is your openness and explicitness around sacred principles and sort of...
Hang on, that's Russell Brand. Sorry about that. I don't know how he managed to creep in there, but let's now have a listen to the correct clip from the EU scrutiny of the new commissioners.
No, Mr. Fest, I don't see this thing, with all due respect, as an either-or. I do not. Simply do not. I understand that some people want us, force us to think like that. I will not do it. And I go a step further, looking at this part of the hemicycle. I would also resist the temptation of people pushing me, using this argument to do it. There are no two Europes. There is one Europe with place for everyone. That's my answer to Mr. Fest.
But don't you think it is important that commissioners of the EU Commission is clean and are people where we cannot question whether they have integrity or not? Don't you think that's important?
As an expert on foresight, you already know what I'm going to say. Since nothing can surprise you, you must have a relaxing life. I envy you. I don't even know what I will have for dinner. What will I have?
Can you write when I got the portfolio for Foresight? It's true that some of my colleagues have been asking me if I can now tell them what would be the next lotto numbers.
Thank God that we're leaving this political project, because all these ideas of taxation represent everything that is wrong with this union. The difference between the British people and your project is that you are pro-harmonisation. We are pro-sovereignty. So by all means, carry on, but Britain won't be taking part.
Well, I don't share your views, but I appreciate your good wishes.
So there we have some of the hearings going on over in Brussels to these new EU commissioners. Martin, do we start with you again? There is a flawed process here, isn't there, that we've got senior political people nominating those who are going to be actually running the EU through the Commission, and the MEPs are simply not happy. This has never happened before. They've had a good look at their backgrounds, and they've said, well, these people, some of them are simply not clean. We're not going to accept these people running the EU Commission.
Well, the whole point of having the commission is because it kept the decision about who was going to be commissioners at the national level. If you were going to have a federal union, like in the United States, you could elect a president of Europe. You could elect a Congress of Europe. But, of course, because of the history of Europe and the fragmentation, the national governments wanted to keep control of how the commission was formed. And that's why the commission isn't directly elected and is appointed by the political representatives of the various countries. It's a bit of a dog's breakfast, but the alternative of having a federal state is one that nobody really wants.
Ursula von der Leyen has been accepted by the MEPs. She's going to be the new commissioner, taking over from Juncker.
I got that right, I think, yes. Not Tusk, Juncker, at the Commission.
I wrote a book with the European Commission.
We've had him on this programme. Mm-hmm. Her main thing is the implementation of the European Defence Union. So that's obviously going to be a big thing at the Commission. But anyway, Richard, what do you make of these hearings? And why haven't we... I mean, on the 1st of November, the day after the 31st of October, we're supposed to have a new EU Commission, but it's not happening.
Well, you know, this is an organisation that's not known for its transparency. There's no accountability for MEPs' expenses. There's been no accounts for the last, I think, about 17 years now. So there's never been this scrutiny. There's never been the transparency that there should be in an organisation of this kind. I mean, Ursula von der Leyen, she was shoehorned in on a smoke-filled room, backroom deal. Nothing open at all. And to say, Martin,
she's been approved by the MEPs. These other ones haven't, but she has.
She has been. But the other interesting thing you didn't mention was that apparently she's also said that if the UK is still in the European Union on the 1st of November, we have to have a UK commissioner as well, which will be quite interesting to see who would be nominated.
But she won't be in charge on the 1st of November now. Anyway, Sandy, does it bit of a mess, isn't it, over in Brussels? It's not perfect over there at the moment.
It is a mess. Do you know what? I'm not going to claim to be any sort of expert on how the EU Commission runs. I do know it's not perfect, but then the hearings that you've just played are exactly what should be happening. If people don't like what's going on, that's the democratic process,
but
the legal process.
But what's happened is people have been put forward for these jobs with things like criminal records,
yeah.
And so the MEPs have taken weeks and weeks and months even having to say, well, no, you can't have that one. They put another one forward, they scrutinise them, and they say, well, no, we're not having that one either.
And my understanding is that actually it's been Britain that stood in, part one of the countries that stood in the way of having directly elected commissioners in the past. I don't know the detail of that, but that's my understanding of it. So I think in a way we're sort of reaping what we've sown, and having a slightly, as you say, smoke-filled room system because we haven't allowed it to open up. And you know, the reason we have the EU, the reason the EU is a good thing is because there are big multinational corporations who are moving their tax dollars around the world in order to avoid paying tax, that environmental issues cross boundaries, migration crosses boundaries, matters of international security cross boundaries. And in order to avoid these big companies playing us all for fools and moving stuff around the world so that they don't pay their tax in the country that they're earning their money, then that's why we need supranational organisations to take control of those.
Juncker, when he was Prime Minister of Luxembourg and Finance Minister of Luxembourg, set up Luxembourg as effectively a tax haven within the European Union. The Republic of Ireland has a much lower corporation tax rate than other countries. There's no harmonisation there, simply to become an offshore tax haven within the European Union. So this is just nonsense that you're coming out with.
I agree, but that's the whole point of the European Union. It's starting to debate things. We've started to tackle people like Google and Amazon who have been paying a pittance in tax, and yet they're sucking the resources out of the country. So okay. That's the whole point.
I'm going to just draw a line under this now and ask you all, one by one, what is going to happen next Thursday? Is there going to be any kind of Halloween exit from the EU? Are we going to get our extension? Martin, you first.
I imagine there's going to be a flexible extension, and then when the people are satisfied that they've debated the bill, you've then got a bill that either goes through or doesn't go through, and then you have a general election or a referendum to resolve it.
Yeah, I think anybody who thinks they can predict the future in these situations is fooling themselves. I agree. I think you're probably right. There's a whole number of outcomes. I definitely don't think we're going to leave now on the 31st of October, which I think is a good thing because it allows us to debate the deal more and allows the people, either through Parliament or through an election, to have their say.
Richard?
Well, I think the last time I came on this programme, I said, you know, we're not leaving next week. That's quite clear. I don't know whether we're ever actually going to be leaving, if I'm absolutely honest with you. The fact of the matter is there's been delay all the way down the line. So I do agree with Sandy, a general election may not... We do want a general election, but there is, of course, a risk that we may end up with another hung parliament.
So how long do you think this extension will be for?
Well, I think the extension will probably be to the end of January, to be honest with you. I think
there will be another extension after that?
Well, I think that's quite likely, because we need to see over the next 3 months what's going to happen. Will the government has got a minority of minus 43. How long can this zombie government continue in a zombie parliament? There does need to be an election. There doesn't need to be a referendum. We've had that. And if I can just correct Sandy here on what he said earlier, it's not a no-deal Brexit. It's a World Trade Organization Brexit that is very clearly set.
Without a deal with the EU.
This is not a deal. We're not talking about a deal now. Boris Johnson's not talking about a deal. He's talking about a treaty, which is a different thing. It's a treaty, an international treaty that he's talking about. And that is what needs to be made clear and isn't currently being made clear. All these loose terms.
I may be wrong, but I thought that treaties were actually just negotiated by governments and parliaments didn't get involved. There's just one thing I'd like to say about this, we're going to be talking about Martin Bormann, the treasurer for the Nazi Party afterwards, but I look at this and I can see some similarities with his tactics here. Martin Bormann's delay tactic is agree, report progress, this is how he dealt with Hitler, let time pass, and then gradually introduce obstacles. And that's what I've seen in a lot of this Brexit process, is that rather than do it and then tweak it, we're seeing delay after delay after delay. Anyway, so...
Can I say on that, which is why the people's vote is the best way through this. I get that it is not a perfect way through this, but the trouble is people vote in a general election on a whole range of issues and should not just be thinking about Brexit, which is why the people's vote is the way through this. Whether you like it or not...
Maybe we'll see. There may be one. We shall certainly see. Anyway, I did play you a little bit of Russell Brand, which we don't often get on here. But he had a fascinating conversation with I found it fascinating, enlightening, with the founder of Extinction Rebellion, Gail Bradbrook. And so let's have a little listen to that now, and we can all see what we make of XR, this great new Bristol and Stroud based and origined, actually becoming an international direct action phenomenon.
One of the things I'm interested in is your openness and explicitness around sacred principles and transcendent ideas. And are you concerned that this similarly will be used to undermine the credibility of the movement?
I think it helps that I have a PhD in molecular biophysics when I'm talking about that, so I do waft that around a little bit just as a kind of, you know, there's actually, as you know, the science behind some of the conversations around spirituality. And basically for me it's an experiential thing anyway. I've had my own experiences that make me want to do things. Some people in the movement find it tricky, you know, and I've talked about how I'd like to see a mass psychedelic civil disobedience, but that was just a personal opinion. So it's not just outside. We can be ridiculed, but we need a paradigm shift. And to me, the paradigm shift won't come without at least some of us. I'm sure you know about the sort of shift to teal consciousness that's happening at the minute. So
no, talk me through it.
Okay. Oh, that's a really interesting piece. So there is this paradigm, there is a shift in consciousness happening. It sounds very hippie-ish when you talk like that. And I think it's really important that one of the main things from Extinction Rebellion is trying to remain a broad church, that if you have a very scientific paradigm and you want to focus on current politics and affecting current politics, there's a space for you. If you have a paradigm that says I want to walk the Mary Markle line singing and praying, then there's a space for you in it. And that, as again Mickey Kashtan talks about, both and, you know, sometimes things are set up against each other, but they're not in opposition. No. You know, they're just different perspectives and different needs. So there's a system called spiral dynamics, and you look at different levels of consciousness that have happened throughout history, and they check in online at different stages, and they check in online throughout your lifetime. Actually, it's really cool. Politicians have used it. It's something you can measure by asking people questions, and it's not like you're just one or the other. So like the beige layer is the layer that babies are in. It's like all about needs, like I need a toilet, I'm hungry or whatever, and it moves up through animistic religions and different, and they, and you know when they came in online for humanity roughly from the geological record, right? Ooh.
Well, it's interesting, talking about spiral dynamics in politics, Sandy. I wonder if you managed to become mayor of this city, will you be introducing workshops in spiral dynamics?
No, I won't. But I think what we need to talk about is the message, the clear message that Extinction Rebellion is bringing, which is climate change is a real and present threat that we have to deal with now. Now, whatever your motivation for thinking that, scientific or spiritual, I think is what she's saying, doesn't matter. What really matters is that we start to take action now to combat climate change, and that's what I would intend to do should I become mayor. And that means very specific actions. The interesting thing is, you know, if you're going to tackle climate change, actually the things you need to do are quite boring. They're things like bus lanes and cycle lanes and stuff like that.
Marvin the mayor right now has got a real difficult problem to cope with. That is too much emissions in the city centre. What would you do?
So we've said already that we would put in a congestion charge that would raise us £6.5 million a year to invest in buses, cycle lanes, and that kind of thing.
Because you know what he says? He says because it would affect poor people too much.
Yep. So can I finish? So the congestion charge would only be for people coming driving in from outside of the city. So if you live in Hartcliffe or in Lockleys or Clifton or Hillfields or wherever, you do not pay the congestion charge. Second of all, it would be between 7 and 10 a.m. So it's not going to ruin Broadmead and the shopping centre. People can still come shopping. But what it will do by reducing the number of cars coming in, we can invest in public transport, cycling.
That would be nice, walking. Wouldn't it? How are you going to make the buses more attractive? Because that's what people will be wanting to hear. They don't want just the stick. They want a bit of carrot.
I agree, absolutely. So you have to provide the carrot. And you talk to all of the bus companies and you look at all the traffic flow diagrams. It's the problem with buses is that they get stuck in traffic. So what we need to do is prioritise the space that we have on the roads for cycling, public transport and walking. And actually, it's not rocket science. It is about putting new bus lanes in where they are. Marvin's been talking about this sort of £5 billion, £6 billion mass transit system that might appear in 20 or 30 years'
time. Yeah.
The underground. But actually, for far less money, you could do exactly the same thing by pushing good bus lanes through the city centre to the point where what we would aim for is that buses move through the city and stop only at traffic lights and bus stops.
Richard Ford for the Brexit Party. What do you make of what you heard from Gail Bradbrook from Extinction Rebellion? It's a bit of an insight into some of the thinking behind it, not necessarily what we've seen on the streets.
Well, the problem with Gail Bradbrook, and indeed she's in Stroud, I think she's working for Ecotricity in Stroud, who's the guy who funded all the millionaire who funded all the court cases about Brexit. But anyway, the fact is, I liked much more what Sandy was saying. Frankly, I find it much more practical in a big city like Bristol to get people on public transport, to get them walking, to do those things that can happen immediately. They're clear things. Extinction Rebellion in Stroud, for example, they completely blocked the whole of the town up. There was criminal damage on the London Road to street signs. This is the kind of thing that kids are taking out of school.
It sounds like a bit of graffiti.
That's criminal damage, you know, and things are broken, and that's happened all over the country. That is not, you know, we do have a climate emergency, I do agree, and things do need to be done about it. I'm completely on the same page as Sandy with that, but there is a different way of implementing it. And the other issue, I think, is that when, you know, we have green millionaires that are funding in the same way as you have millionaires funding other parties, all for their own advantage. And very often those millionaires are drawing their income from EU subsidies in electric vehicles and all the rest of it. So, but I did like what you were saying. If you became mayor, I don't think it's an idea to spend 30 years building an underground system for Bristol. I do think it's a great idea to get better public transport.
Martin Summers, what do you make of what you've heard? A little bit of the insight into the, what was it, psychedelic direct action. And this is the right time of year with the magic mushrooms for that, isn't it?
I'm all in favour of young people getting involved in politics and having issues that they're concerned about. One of the things that worries me is, some of the tactics are not helping the cause, because if you make ordinary people's lives more difficult, you're not actually getting
the
message across.
What about the tube trains? I mean, that's one thing I found absolutely unbelievable.
In fact, there was a battle
went on the platform between the Canning Town residents and dragging.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just bonkers. I mean, Greenpeace pioneered these tactics years ago, and you go for specific things like a whaling ship or a factory or something like that.
Yeah. What do you make of the tube train incident?
Yeah, I mean, if you just stop people going to work, they're going to get annoyed, aren't they?
It was a mistake. But I think we fall into this trap of just being able to pick holes in things. We expect everything to be perfect. What is the message is still there that we need to tackle the climate emergency. And can I say, so lots of people talked about the working class people who are on the tubes getting to work, which I agree. And you know what? A lot of the solutions to the environmental problems that we face are also the solutions to equality and opportunity in the city.
Isn't one of are the solutions actually more tubes rather than less tubes?
Yeah, yeah, agree. More tubes, absolutely. More public transport and more tubes.
But one thing Extinction Rebellion are not very clear about, in fact, they keep very quiet about, is nuclear. We had the chap from Stop Hinkley on here making a pretty convincing case that it not only is it extremely bad for the environment, nuclear power, never mind the climate effect, it's also completely unworkable in terms of finance. So can I hear from the three of you, Martin, Sandy and Richard, on nuclear? Is that part of the solution?
Nuclear power is not viable on a private sector basis. The French have got to most of their electricity generated by nuclear power, but they've never been able to make it pay. What really worries me, if I can come back to the further point about Extinction Rebellion, the danger of a nuclear war is actually higher than ever, and the young people need to be thinking about that, not
okay.
just about
Sandy,
climate change.
What about nuclear? Should we be doing that because of its
no,
apparent lack
we,
of...
No, we shouldn't, and Martin's absolutely right. The economics no longer make any sense, and also, per gigawatt hour that we produce of electricity, green energy creates more jobs. So we talk about, you know, the need to bring manufacturing back to Britain. You know, green technologies do that, and Bristol is a real hub for green technologies and green business, so we could be, if we invested, we could be creating more jobs, putting them in the south of the city to support those more marginalised communities. So the solutions are both environmental and social.
Richard,
they help us
Richard,
to become a more equal
Hinkley
city.
Hinkley C is only going to happen with an enormous government subsidy. What do you think is part of the solution or not?
I think as a solution we need to have every type of energy that we can, whether it's green energy, whether it's nuclear.
What are you going to do with the waste afterwards then?
Well, I'm not a nuclear I'm not a scientist. These things need to be looked into clearly before we go into them. But I mean,
will you slip it down between the tectonic plates under the earth, or fire it into the sun, or what?
Like I said, I'm not a physicist or a scientist, but I do think we need to have every source of energy that we can draw upon. Can I ask a question, please? Yeah, I'd like to ask you, Sandy. You know, if you become mayor, your ideas on transport. What's your thoughts on the 20-mile-an-hour limits, car limits?
I think we keep them, and all of the consultations have said that about 75% of people agree that we should keep them.
Because again, Stroud is the only place in the UK apart from Brighton that has the Green Party in power. They're in a coalition with Labour and the Lib Dems in Stroud. And in Stroud, there's 20-mile-an-hour limits, which don't work, frankly. Basically, people are just there stalling, queuing, running their engines. You know, it's actually creating more pollution.
But it's a classic argument that says, oh, I'm stuck in a traffic jam, so I'm creating more pollution. Actually, what we're trying to do is to make it more attractive for people to move around in public transport or other sustainable forms of transport.
But I asked about the 20-mile-an-hour
limit. You know what? It's also a lot safer. Less people are going to be killed or seriously injured if people
20
are
miles an hour.
Trundling around at 20 rather than 30.
Well, yes, but in an urban environment when you have lots of parked cars, you have people that are letting their engines run and all the rest of it. Having experienced it, I can't see, and it's implemented by the Green Lib Dem Labour Council, and so I can't see that works. And I was interested for a bigger... Obviously, Bristol's much bigger.
Well, 75% of people who responded said it does work and supported it, so we would carry on supporting it. And this is my point. That
I mean, there is a joke, isn't there, that actually it's quite difficult to get up to 20 miles an hour in the city.
Yeah. Sure. That's another point, of course.
My experience of the 20-mile-an-hour limit is people around here, people used to drive far too fast down here. Just far too fast. It's dangerous. There's children playing.
Sure.
And people are just,
sure.
You get young lads particularly, just driving way too fast.
Yeah.
There's a thing that the Greens are anti-car. We're not anti-car. What we are is pro-community. So our communities are clogged with cars. They're clogged with pollution. Actually, if we gave streets back to people... Communities meet, neighbours meet, children play, young people hang out, and actually our communities become safer, more pleasant, and more integrated.
I don't think
that is if you become mayor.
That is
but
if
see, the current mayor will not come on this programme. He's never been on this programme. Just before he got elected.
It's a shame.
Just before he got elected, Martin. Mm. You know,
why is that?
Let me finish my sentence. Well, that's a good question, isn't it? Why does the mayor not want to come
He's
on
afraid.
And take difficult questions?
You might ask him things about the Labour Party that he doesn't want to answer.
Yeah, and about his policies, particularly. I mean, you know, I would have thought that it would be a fairly simple cakewalk for him. He's an ex-BBC guy. You know, he should manage to do this sort of
thing. It's a bit like not wanting to face the voters, isn't it?
Well, we'll see what happens in the next, next year to see if he turns up for our... We always do on this show, get all the candidates in and give them a 2-hour run, let everyone say what they want to say, and actually quite a lot of people... download it afterwards, have a listen. Oh, I want to see what this guy's doing. People do care about who they vote for. But people really want to know the person that they're voting for. But we do have a way of getting Marvin Rees on the air right this very second.
How?
Because I downloaded a talk he gave called the State of the City Address. He called it called Delivering for Bristol. Sounded very corporate, and here he is talking about the bringing of Channel 4 into Bristol.
Shameful if he won't be under scrutiny.
And I would be asking Sandy what he makes of Marvin's State of the City Address after we've heard from Marvin, the Labour Mayor.
We overcame over 30 other towns and cities to be chosen as a new home for Channel 4, who are opening their offices in Bristol later this month. And on sport, we protected pitches for grassroots sport and are working with Sports England and local clubs to increase sports hall provision. And our gatherings have brought together people like never before to find opportunities to improve participation, support talent to development, and bring world-class sporting events to the city. That's called keeping your promises. And I'm delighted to be able to share with you and demonstrate delivery for the city. But of course, we didn't stop there with that short list of pledges. And we've delivered so much more. So I'll give you a brief rundown of some of our achievements. But I wanted to start by expressing my gratitude to my hardworking and dedicated cabinet, to my office team, to the City Council leadership and workforce, to our city partners, and also to my Labour colleagues who have delivered a budget year on year in the face of political opposition that's made all this possible. Bristol really is a collective endeavour. So we have the parks prospectus now, and new funding for tree planting as part of our city plan commitment to double the tree canopy in Bristol by 2045. The Stepping Up programme has delivered training and development for 104 participants from BME backgrounds and women and disabled people. 70% of the first cohort have gone on to get promotions, and so far 46% of the second cohort. We also now have a cohort of 35 Somali women, 25 of whom have now gone on to get jobs. This is economic inclusion being delivered. The Bristol Equality Charter successfully launched with 70 signatories to the Bristol Equality Network and the LGBT Plus Voice and Influence Partnership.
Well, that's the Bristol Mayor, Labour Mayor Marvin Rees, speaking a couple of weeks ago in his State of the City Address 2019. Martin, he's talking there about economic inclusion, but we have a bit of a problem, don't we? A lot of this talk about equalities misses out the fact that we've got an increasing divide between rich and poor. We've got a massive increase in the number of homeless people in the city under this mayor, and most shockingly, over the last 5 years, a tripling of the number of homeless deaths, for example. That doesn't seem to fit into Marvin's idea of equality.
Well, I think the problem is that the mayor doesn't actually have much power. The society has run things like universal credit, for example, with the 5-week wait, have impoverished loads of people, but the mayor's got no power over that. And one of the things I do kind of object to about the way Marvin approaches his job is talking about, you know, fixing things, when actually what we need to hear is the blood, sweat and tears speech. The only way to change things in this country is to change the national government.
So, Sandy, as someone
who's mayors don't have much
standing
power
for mayor, does it mean just
when
a minute?
We're ready.
Does it mean that you won't have any power? Martin's implying there that the mayor doesn't really have the power to change things.
I think he's right that the mayor has less power than many people think. But Marvin started that speech by saying we've got to stop tinkering around the edges. Well, the mayor's been in post for 4 years, and if he's just saying that now, I would have expected him to stop tinkering around the edges. Right from the start, the list of so-called achievements that he came up with were fine. They're all good, but they're small fry. You know, 40 new people in a job, 100 people, you know, going through a course, a new charter. That doesn't change things. The air isn't clearer. The buses aren't running any quicker. We're not hearing about new jobs. The number of affordable homes is not rising fast enough. The number of council homes is not rising fast enough.
What would you do for these things in 30 seconds?
So I've already said, and what I'm not going to do is launch my manifesto now, because I'm going to do that next year.
You haven't even got 30 seconds. What do you think of the speech in 10 seconds, Richard?
Well, it was self-congratulatory, wasn't it? And it's rather like the Emperor's got no clothes. I mean, Joseph Stalin used to stand up and make speeches like that and wouldn't be subject himself to scrutiny. I think if you're in a position of Bristol Mayor, it's a major position in a major city in the country, you should subject yourself to questions and scrutiny.
Okay, thanks. Guest, Green Party's Bristol Mayor candidate.
Thank you.
Next May's election, Sandy Hall-Ruffin, and Gloucester's prospective parliamentary candidate for the Brexit Party, Richard Ford.
Thank you very much for the news. Thank you.